Thomas Markle Jr., welcome to A Raise in the Bar, mate. How are you doing?
Good, Connor. Doing really good. How about yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Not bad. I know we've been chatting for quite a while now, so it's good to finally get this in the diary. There's a bit of a time difference because you're in Calabasas at the moment, but yeah, it's good to meet you finally.
Yeah, it's 6 in the morning. I like to get up at 6 and start cracking beers right away. Yeah, it's great. Oh, it's noon. It's noon here, so...
Well, most recently, Tommy, you meant that honestly on Celebrity Big Brother in Australia, so the VIP version. So firstly, how did that come about? And secondly, how did you find it?
Well, let's see. A friend of mine had introduced me to Max Markson out there. And so keeping in touch and talking to Max for a couple of years, you know, I kept bugging him. I go, when are you going to get me down to Australia? When are you going to get me down there? And then one day, hey, I just got back from a visit in Santa Barbara. I went back to New Mexico and my phone rang as I was getting home and it was Max. And he goes, Tom. And I go, yes. And he goes, you know how you've been bugging me to go to Australia? He goes, where you're going. So I was really excited. Really excited.
Good, good. What was the whole experience like then? Because obviously, you know, I guess in the last few years, you've gone from being not in the public eye to being in the public eye, and then Australia, but the Big Brother, you know, VIP version over there, it's very much cameras are on you all the time. So how did you find it?
I thought Big Brother VIP hotel was that whole experience was probably one of the best things I've ever done. I was very, very nervous at first. It was very awkward for me to go to anywhere to hang out with a bunch of people that I've never met before and I don't know anything about them. You know, the only people that I was familiar with would be Caitlyn Jenner and Omarosa, just from them being in the US, because I mean there's quite a bit of difference in programming and networking between the US and Australia. So it was very nerve-wracking. First couple of days were tough. I mean, I was clammed up, I was quiet, you know, I didn't know what to say. I couldn't break in any conversations with anybody. I didn't know who anybody was until, you know, after a couple of days of working my way in and feeling a little bit more comfortable, then it was great. I mean, I just, I made friends with everybody immediately. It was great.
Good. I've obviously been fortunate enough to watch it, you know, through Jess before it came out in the UK. And yeah, absolutely right. I think from an outside looking in, you were quite quite quiet at the start. And I think a few people commented on that. But yeah, as the episodes got you know, further in, you definitely came into your own. And yeah, you came across really well, I thought. You came across really well. Would you do something like that again?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the most important things was, you know, I got thrown a couple of left curves and curveballs from especially Mitzi and Fritzy or whatever their name were on, you know, the radio. But other than that, I think I got to show a lot of people that, you know, I did get a bad rap in the press and, you know, everybody reads into what they believe what they read online about everything because they just tell headlines. So I'm glad I got, you know, the opportunity to show everybody, you know, who I am and what my family's about.
Yeah, good. You know, well, that must have been nerve-wracking because at the start, I can't remember if it was episode one or episode two, but where you do have to go onto that sofa and speak to those two radio presenters, and they basically go in at everyone, don't they, whilst everyone's on the red sofa watching you. And you've got, like you said, the likes of Caitlyn Jenner, Josh Carroll, you had Jess there, of course, Omarosa. Was that nerve-wracking?
Yes, it was. That whole episode was primarily based about getting to know for all the housemates, getting to learn little things and tidbits about each other. And I didn't get that opportunity. I just got, you know, I got robbed, and it was unfair, but I dealt with it. It's all right. I know where they live.
You do know. I used to live more, so you can't ignore you, can they? You can't ghost you. That's all good. So yeah, I mean, there is a lot of big celebrities in there. So was there anyone, obviously I know you get on with all of them, but was there anyone that you really, really bonded with?
Right off the bat, Luke Talkie and I bonded pretty well. We were kind of like, you know, a secret alliance that nobody really knew about. So he was really showing me the ropes. He's obviously done that several times before. And, you know, I like Jess right off the bat. She just, you know, her personality and just, she's just friendly with everybody. And, Imogen, I mean, got on with her pretty quick. Josh Carroll, yeah, everybody, even Bernie. And who was that little guy? The
was it the major?
What's his name? The little
he came in as the I thought it was called the major or the sergeant or something. I can't remember, but was it the guy who'd been on it before?
Yeah, he's been on it before. Yeah,
yeah.
But Omarosa, right off the bat, she just dove right in for the, you know, the insults behind my back, and I guess she didn't really know anything about me, just what she's read. So she had a rough time, but she came around. But she was kind of the first to go for a reason.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, Omarosa was it Donald Trump's kind of like advisor, I guess. So like a pretty stressful job, I guess. But it just shows. Yeah. The amount of people and the variety of different people that they get into a Big Brother house like that. So, I mean, it was a really interesting watch. It's on, obviously, E4 at the moment over here. So, really good for you, obviously, trying to get your name and get your story across to the UK people as well. So, yeah, if anyone's not watching, I'd definitely recommend that they do, because it was good. It was tense. It is tense because it is a game at the end of the day, isn't it? You have got to stab people in the back, which I guess some people didn't get that it was a game, I'll be honest, from the outside looking in again. A lot of people were quite annoyed when they were stabbed in the back, but it's like you say, it's a game. You're trying to win for a charity. Which was your charity again? Who were you raising money for?
It was ASTA. I chose to play for them because it's a small organization, and they focus their abilities and their services around like a one-on-one basis. They were after, like, you know, expanding their operation a little bit and getting another van and a couple more people working for them. So that's why I chose them, because they actually help people one-on-one.
Yeah. So you can see the actual, yeah, the outcome of your donation, I guess, can't you? See where it's going. Yeah. That's very good. And even if you don't win, I guess it's about what raising awareness for those as well, because I've never heard of them, but a lot of people will love on the back of Big Brother.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good stuff. So have you watched it back? Have you watched it back since it aired?
Yeah, me and my son, I went up to visit my son in Oregon and see my new grandson. And he brought it up over there with the link that we had. So it's kind of odd watching yourself on television. So it's a lot better than watching yourself on an interview, that's for sure. Yeah.
Love it. I mean, the challenges were pretty incredible as well. I was watching some of the challenges and thinking, how the hell are they managing to do that? And I think what doesn't come across is actually how long some of them take. You know, it might be 10 minutes on an edited version, but Jess was saying that like some of them two or three hours long to get done.
Absolutely. You know, that's one of the things that really took me by surprise, because not only is it a mental, it is a mental game. I mean, it's, I'm not going to say military, but it's based along the lines of breaking you down to absolutely nothing and then rewarding you and then taking it away and rewarding you and taking it away. And then you make friends with people and you feel as though you're part of a group and you're in a clique. And then next thing you know, you're on the chopping block and you're on your way out. But you can't train for any of those challenges. I mean, they come up with some really good ones. You know, you could go to the gym and work out for 6 months and it's not going to matter, because in that gym, you didn't hang upside down by your toenails for 4 days, you know? So yeah. It's very challenging. So.
Which was the hardest one for you?
Oh, let's see. Probably the pegboard one, where you're on the cover of a magazine. Yeah, just awkward positioning and you're hanging onto these pegs at a little bit of an incline, and then it goes a little farther, and you know, you've been up there for, you know, 10-15 minutes, and then he just tilts it forward, you're done. I mean, I was done pretty quick on that one.
Yeah, I don't just won that one, and yeah. I have no idea how she managed it, but yeah, it was,
yeah, you know, the thing about that particular challenge was so funny, because we're sitting here struggling and just dying, you know, and every muscle in your upper body is burning like crazy. And then I look over at Jess and she's like laughing and swinging around and you know, hanging on. It was hilarious.
She was even giving out some banter, weren't she? She was literally telling people to, you know, like she was playing a hard game at that point.
Yeah, yeah. No, she was good. Yeah, she took that one down.
anyway, we digress. We're obviously Thomas Markle Jr. last name is obviously very, very well known, and you know, even more so over the past few years, I guess. So there's been, you know, a bit of a public feud with Meghan, and it's been all over. It's been everywhere. So when did this all blow up? Was it on the back of the letter to Prince Harry back in 2018?
I'm going to tell you that story real quick, how that letter all came about. Okay. Mm. I was swarmed with paparazzi everywhere in the smallest little hole in the wall town called Grants Pass, Oregon. That's where I was, living after, when all this started.
Yeah.
And it was just, I mean, I felt so violated, you know, like being just thrown into it. You know, I couldn't go anywhere without being photographed, and they're writing stories around the photographs. So being new to it, I mean, there's no training and no anything for that. You're just, you know, you just, you're really under the gun. You're in the spotlight, and it got really, invasive, you know, and so I talked to a lawyer friend of mine up there, and he's, you know, really, he happened to be really up and really into the royal family and has followed them. And I asked him to do me a favor and get a hold of the palace, whoever handles their PR for Meghan and Harry, get a hold of them and tell them to, you know, back off. And just, it's not my responsibility. Mm. And it's not. I mean, you know, they should do damage control and stuff like that, or somebody should come around and talk to somebody and tell them what to say, especially when they don't have any experience dealing with the press. Mm. So he did get a hold of that gal. Mm. Her name at the time was Naomi. Mm. And Naomi Smith. Mm. And the response that we got back from Meghan was, "That's distant family and I don't know those people," which threw me for a loop, because Meghan and I had a great time growing up together. I mean, we like each other. We always had a good time together. And birthdays, parties, holidays, everything. And even though our family has always been separated and divided and we live over here and over there, we all still get together and we all still communicate and have a good time. And that was a little bit hurtful, because all I wanted was my result of me doing that was, all I wanted was them to leave me alone and just back off, you know, just leave me alone. I'm a private citizen. So, and when I got that response, it really did kind of irritate me. So irritate. So I don't know. I just, you know, that's all I could think of at the time on how to get my point across. The only way I knew how to do it, because I had that power now. Mm. So I sat down and I wrote a really disturbing letter. If she's going to treat me and her, our whole family like that, then, you know, it's just wrong. It's not right. And it's completely, you know, now that, you know, everybody says I'm right, by the way, because, you know, recent events and everything that's come out, and, you know, Meghan and, you know, her interviews and lying and all that stuff, you know, it just comes out. And there's no way around it. So that's where that letter came from. So
yeah, no, that makes sense. What was your mindset like? What was your mental health like at that point? Because I think, I'm not sure if you were a glass fitter at the time. I know you've previously been a glass fitter, and it was probably around the time where this, you know, did start to pick up. So going from something like that to, like you say, having paparazzi everywhere, being in the front papers all the time, you know, having news shows talk about you, like, how did that impact your mental health?
Mentally, I've always been very stable. Mm. I've always been a hard worker. The majority of the time, I've always worked for myself. Mm. But you know, yeah, mental health has never been an issue. It disturbed me that, you know, and maybe I went about it the wrong way. But you know, that's where you don't sit down and do a couple shots and have a few beers and write a letter. Mm. You know, comes back and bites you in the ass later. So, but you know, on the other hand, you know, I will always continue to stick up for my family.
Yeah.
Always. And especially my father. You know, my father does not deserve what he's been going through in the press since all this began. I mean, you know, telling him that he faked a heart attack. I mean, who does that? That's about as low as you can go. I mean, my dad did not fake a heart attack. He was in a hospital bed when all that went down. So that right there that needs to be corrected somehow, some way. And that was a lot of me going on Big Brother and having that platform to express that genuinely.
Yeah. And,
you know, just for my father's benefit, because he deserves better.
Yeah, absolutely. It must be difficult when you do get claims like that, you know, faking a heart attack. Obviously, it's not something anyone, you know, would do. So, no, I completely get that. And you did get the opportunity, like you say, you had the platform on Celeb Big Brother. You wrote a new letter to kind of apologize for that initial letter. And was that just felt like it was the right time to do so?
Well, that was that letter was genuine, 100% and real. I did that because myself, including the rest of my family, have been drugged through the press, and you know, we don't have the capability to have PR teams working for us who can sit there and just flood the internet with whatever drummed up old stories that they keep revamping over and over again. We don't have that luxury, right? So that was a heartfelt letter. And it was sincere. And I'm shocked that, you know, I mean, somebody has to be the bigger person and just say, you know, enough is enough. That was yesterday. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow's tomorrow. You know, you only have one family. All that in that letter was real. 100%.
Good. No, it came across as real. It definitely did. I mean, Luke was sat with you when you were reading it and he was supporting you, and you overcame by emotions, I guess, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I may be a hard ass at a lot of things, but I am emotional, and I do have a soul, and it's, you know, that's one thing that you can't put a price on. I mean, I do have a heart, and I do have a soul, and I do have a conscience, and I do know right and wrong. So, you know, that was put out there for a reason, hoping to get something towards my dad. I really wanted my dad it would make him cry if she called him. You know, and that's 100% real. You know, he doesn't want all this animosity and all this tension, all this stress. He just wants his daughter.
Yeah, it's his daughter at the end of the day. You're exactly right. Absolutely right. And he sent a pre-recorded clip off to you, didn't he, when you were in that in the Big Brother house. And again, that must have been emotional, not seeing him for so long and, you know, not talking to him, especially because you are completely cut off from the world in there, aren't you?
Yes. I'll tell you one thing, though, and for my father to do that, that was one of a kind right there. I'm so surprised that he did that. That's what I broke down. I teared up. I was speechless. You know,
the thing behind you doing that letter, of course, is the fact that you do want to rekindle with Megan, but I imagine she's not got in touch with you just yet.
Well, you know, it's up to her. She, you know, it you know, she's the only one who can figure it out on her own. I mean, you can't force anybody into anything. At some point in her life, she'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But I would, you know, really like her to do it before something serious does happen to my father. So,
yeah.
But, you know, my dad loves having my company. We have a really good time together. We go out to dinner twice a week to sample all the really good restaurants down in Rosarito. And, you know, I was helping him change out his battery last time I was down there, and watched football together. So we watched all the playoff games up into the Super Bowl.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. We sat there and we watched four great playoff games that all went into overtime for some reason. And they were just like, you know, great games. So we've been spending a lot of good time together. And I'm glad that him and I have, you know, because, you know, we were rocky for a long time as well. So I'm glad for the last, you know, year or so, we've been really good and well off.
Turning a negative into a positive, I guess, isn't it? And yeah, like you say, you see him all the time now. And he comes really, really well. He comes across really well in, he did a interview with a British TV program, Susanna Reid and Richard Madeley. It was only about 4 months ago, to be fair. He was talking obviously about the Meghan and Harry thing, but he comes across really well, and he looks well as well, you know, considering that he's had a heart attack not too long ago.
Yeah. I don't agree with his diet. I've been trying to help him out, and just, you know, I mean, you know, I have to take into consideration his schedule for his entire life has been the night shift.
Yeah. Yeah.
You go in and you light the set, and the, you know, you come in the next day, the talent comes in, you shoot it, and then you break it down, you do it again. So his schedule of working, you know, four 20-hour shifts in a row in the studios, you know, producing all those shows. So you don't get the best diet, you don't eat the best food. And, you know, so I've been working on him, and he hates it. He yells at me. I try to give him, like, you know, cause I drink superfood and super beets, and, yeah, you know, the drinks, and I do that religiously every day. And, you know, I gave him one time with a little extra lemon and what else? Ginger and turmeric and stuff like that. And it tastes like shit, but it's really good for you, right?
Yeah, you know it's good when it tastes like shit, basically.
Yeah. So I gave him one day because I was just trying to get him on like a 7-day, just do it for 7 days, Dad, trust me, you're going to love it, you know? And the next day, he's just like looking at me like I, you know, killed his dog or something. You know, he was so pissed off. But slowly but surely, you know, I'm getting to drink more water and be a little bit more healthy and get a little more active. So it's working.
Good stuff. Whereabouts is he living now? Is he still in America?
No, he's in Rosarito.
Okay. Very nice.
He's been down there for 8 years. He loves it.
Oh, amazing. So how can we move down there? What was the reason for that?
Well, he retired. So he's got a great spot on the beach. You know, he looks at the ocean, the Coronado Islands, and great view. He loves the ocean. He loves the salt air. And you know, he sort of likes being by himself a lot. You know, he's been around crowds his whole life. So he just wants to just relax and chill out.
Well, he's worked hard for it, hasn't he? So he can do that. That's good. I mean, a lot of people do want to get away. I mean, obviously, as I'm from Manchester and in the UK, we see a lot of UK press, etc. And when it all came out about Harry and Meghan moving away to go, you know, get away from the media, but yet they're still in the media a hell of a lot. What do you think the reason is behind the fact they are actively in the media, not just like articles that have been written about them, but they're actively doing interviews, the Oprah interview, for example, you know, TV shows, etc. What's the reason behind that?
No matter what they do or where they go or where they live, it doesn't matter. They'll always be in the media. You know, if they don't make public appearances, they'll be popped, you know, paparazzi will get them. Meghan likes the spotlight. She'll be there no matter what, always. I don't know exactly what happened with Spotify and Netflix and stuff like that, but there's a little rocky turbulence there.
Okay. Yeah. I saw along the lines of a Netflix documentary, but not heard anything about it for quite a while.
But, you know, also on the other hand, I did call all this years ago. I did. I made a couple of statements. No, they'll leave the palace. And she'll be back in California and she'll go back into acting, you know? So I see it. It's already happening. You know, they went to Vancouver first.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they went down, they came to Mulholland Estates at Tyler Perry's house.
Yeah. Yeah.
They stayed a bit, and then they went to Montecito. And now I think I read something the other day, as a matter of fact, about Meghan probably getting back into the acting spotlight.
Time, ladies and gentlemen.
We're going to play Daft or Craft, okay? So this is a game where there's three craft ale names. Two of them are real. One of them has been made up by me. And you've got to weigh up which one's been made up by me. We'll then taste the two beers that are actually real and rate them out of 10. So are you ready to play Daft or Craft, Tom?
Yes.
Fantastic. So the first option, Space Dust. Space Dust. The second option, Maximus Colossal. And the third option, Catastrophic Impact. Which one do you think has been made up by me?
Catastrophic Impact.
You locking that answer in?
I phone a friend. New show, Who Wants to Be an Alcoholic?
Who wants to be an alcoholic, absolutely. That's the kind of audience we're after as well. So you are correct, Tommy. Well done. So hopefully you should have some beers next year, and you should have Space Dust and Maximus Colossal in there. I want you to take them out, taste each one, and then give me a rating out of 10.
You did pick some of the most ass-kicking beers available on the market. You know that, right?
Spent a lot of time researching those and thinking, which ones are you going to like here?
And what?
It'd be Maximus Colossal. FYI, I think that is a very strong one.
Okay, now Lagunitas.
Yes.
Just so when I'm in, there's a sushi spot down where my place is in Mexico, in Baja. Mm-hmm. And and I got introduced to these down there eating sushi, and boy, three of these and you're done.
Yeah. What are they, about 7, 8, 9%?
Yeah. These are, yeah, nine.
Nine.
Yeah. This is three beers in one, by the way.
I think you've got quite a few there as well.
Although I will say I have not had the Maximus. Mm-hmm. I've had the Little Something.
Yep. Yep.
And there's another one, the Lagunitas IPA.
Yeah, I nearly got you the Little Something. Very, very nearly got you that. I'm glad I didn't get that one now.
I've never had this before, though.
No? What's it like?
It's quite good.
Yeah? Yeah? Yeah. What's it rate out of 10?
Let's see. On the Elysian Space Dust, I'm going to give that a good 7.
Good 7. That's not too bad. And how about the Maximus Colossal?
I'm going to have to bump up to about an 8, 8.5 on that one.
8.5. That's big. That is very, very big.
Yeah. Recently, you know, I've always been like, honestly, I've been just drinking Corona and, you know, like more commercialized beers for the longest time. And in the last probably 4 years, I've really, with all these little microbrews coming up and these little independent labels, really good beers coming out.
Yeah, there is. The craft beer market is absolutely booming at the moment. I think we had probably about 3 or 4 years ago, it was the gin market, but I think craft beer is really coming back now. And it's just in Manchester where I am, there must be 20 to 30 microbreweries that are all doing really well. It's good to see all the variety, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll tell you a little story. When I was in, I went back to Chinatown in New York. I was going to do a commercial for a beer company and be the face of their beer. It's called, I'm not even going to promote him because the guy pissed me off. So he flew in a German brewmaster, a 400-year generation in their family of brewing beers. And he was going to bring them in to set up a beer garden. And he really informed me and taught me so much about beer and its health benefits. And when you buy a commercialized beer that's already been bottled and everything, it loses so much of its, what do they call it? Anti-aging properties and health benefits. I mean, it's so good for your hair and your skin. That's why, I mean, the Germans actually do wash their hair in beer.
Yeah. Wow.
But he told me when you're buying a bottle of beer that's been sitting on a shelf for a while, it's just really not too good for you whatsoever. But when you buy these micro beers and you get them within like the 30 days of them being bottled and brewed and packaged, very, very good for you to have a couple of good beers. And the best way to do it is actually in the beer garden method is when they actually pour it from a tap. Yeah. When that keg is less than a week old.
It's really, really good when you can go to a micro brewer that you can see it being actually brewed. And like you say, you can even taste it before it's been, you know, being through the whole process. So it's not fizzy and things like that. So, I mean, any excuse for me to try as much beer as possible, I think that's the way to live, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
100%. So you've gone for 7 out of 10 for the Space Dust and 8.5 for the Maximus Colossal.
Yes.
Okay, good. And also you'll be sleeping in about 3 hours on the back of that with it being 9%, won't you?
Oh, no, sorry. No, I'm pretty seasoned at this.
Well, you can finish it all off later today then, can't you?
Yes. But, well, you know, I mean, I have been, you know, more conscious about, you know, I mean, beer is great. I love beer. I've always loved beer. I love the taste of it. It brings people together for, you know, barbecues, cooking events, social events. Mm-hmm. But too many beers, you can get yourself in trouble, and you don't ever drink and drive. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. As the world knows that I actually, you know, I got my first DUI when I was 50, but I did a program and learned a lot about drinking and driving. And it's just, you know, I was eligible for what they call diversion. So I didn't get convicted of a DUI and I don't have it on my record, but yep. It really opened my eyes that, you know, you really do need to drink responsibly. So, you know, do it at home or definitely, you know, what people don't realize is there's a thing called Uber, you know, when you're out drinking and having a good time and you've had two beers, especially something like this, you're definitely over the legal limit. And, for $20, you can get yourself home for free. I mean, for without problems, but, so now, I mean, what I was really talking about was like, so now since I don't have to load up on the calories, I'll just do a couple of shots of tequila or whatever and have a couple of beers and just, you know, it works out pretty good.
Yeah, I'm a big tequila fan. So if anyone gets any tequila, I'm more than willing to do that. As long as it's got lemon and salt or lime and salt, I've got to have.
On that subject, I'm blown away because, you know, like when I came back from Australia, I went down and I was hanging out with my dad. So I got a place on the beach, like, you know, a few doors down from him. But I was cruising around Rosarito and I found this shop, like a little hole in the wall liquor store. And I went in and it kept going like a maze to these back rooms. And I found there was a room back there with probably, I am not kidding, probably 400 or 500 different tequilas in Mexico.
I think I've probably had 4 or 5 in my life. I didn't realize that there was even that many.
No idea. And then I found out you can go in there and you can sample them. So I don't even know how you would get out of there.
If I ever doing a raise in the bar on tour, I think that's probably one of the stop offs, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's right next to this place called Bada Bings.
Bada Bings. What do they do? Yeah.
Well, take a wild guess if you've ever seen The Sopranos.
That's great. So obviously as an American, you're mainly over in America. I know you love Australia as well, by the way. I've seen a lot of things saying that you love Australia and like to go over there a lot more as and when you can. But how much have you been following the whole story with Prince Andrew over here?
Let's see. Well, not really that much. You know, it's I've been following Kate.
Yep.
Kate and William a little bit. I'm she's really just glowing now. Mm-hmm. Happy about that. Andrew is just Andrew is Andrew, right? Isn't he in a little bit of hot water now? I think
he's in a lot of hot water. I think he's out of the hot water at the moment because we've just had I can't remember what she's called, Virginia. She's basically settled out of court for £12 million with Prince Andrew. But apparently today, MPs in the UK have been banned from investigating whether it's taxpayers' money that are paid for that. So he's out of it a little bit more, but he's still mad in it. And obviously, because I'm in the UK, like I say, it's in the press all the time.
Yeah. One thing I was going to, I made a video that I didn't post, but it was wishing the Queen so much happiness and congratulations for her 70th Jubilee. And that was cool. That was special, but
she's incredible. She had COVID recently as well. I had COVID literally. Yeah. To go.
Well, she's tough.
She is definitely. Yeah. A lot of people are saying because of this Prince Andrew stuff that the stuff in Ukraine hasn't come at a better time because obviously all the media attention is on Ukraine now. Are you keeping an eye on that I guess developing story?
Yeah, that is so awful. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just seems like the whole world is just over people like that and over conflicts like that. I mean, enough is enough. I mean, we have enough problems as it is to let alone, you know, go and do that. I mean, you know, cause, you know, worthless conflict that, you know, lives and displacement of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. It's awful. And there's no sense in it.
No,
it's no sense in it. I am really happy that the EU imposed a lot more sanctions and have really come together as far as like, you know, if you step on one square inch of any NATO properties, I mean, you're going to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad Germany and France and everybody's coming together and making it a lot harder because the whole world, I mean, even his own people, even Putin's own people are protesting against him. I mean, massive demonstrations all over the world now. So
yeah, it's absolutely incredible to see how they come together. I've seen a Twitter, quite weirdly, is quite probably the easiest way to, and quickest way to get news stories before they've actually hit the news, because all these videos that are going out there become viral and then obviously they go onto the news articles, etc. But there's been beer manufacturers that have stopped manufacturing beer and they've started making Molotov cocktails. They did a personal label which said Putin is a dick, and they're using that, you know, by the hundreds of thousands. I don't know if you've seen how they're doing. They're changing all the road signs, so that they're taking the road signs down, and they're replacing them with "Go fuck yourself" this direction, "Go fuck yourself" that direction, and then back to Russia. It's Go Fuck Yourself in Russia. And I can't believe how many people are coming together. I think, you know, if that happened in the UK, would we react like that? I hope we would, but it's incredible to see how strong they are.
Yeah, well, hopefully it'll just, you know, I mean, he is obviously a madman, okay? And we can all just hope and pray that this just gets shut down as soon as possible. It has to, because, you know, God help us if he's that nuts and that crazy and he does something really stupid. I mean, you know, some of our defense guys over here on interviews I was watching, they said, there is no way he'll be able to pull off his nuclear threat because we're three steps ahead of him.
Yeah.
Because US and NATO allies have technology that they don't have. And we can only hope that never even comes to that. But on the other hand, I was reading this little article, watching this little video. Some Ukrainian soldiers came about a tank with some Russian guys on it. And apparently they were out of gas, you know, so they stopped and they asked them if they needed some help. And they said, yeah, we've run out of gas. And it wasn't Ukrainian soldiers. It was a trucker, a Ukrainian trucker. And he says, no, but I'll tow you back to Russia if you want. That was great.
I've even seen another one, which is a tractor towing a tractor, Ukrainian farmer towing a broken down tank, and the Russians running after him. I'm just like, you can't make this stuff up, can you?
Yeah, we just need to just, you know, we just come together as a world. We just don't want this anymore. It's just so wrong. And you know, like I said, the world has enough problems as it is right now, let alone, you know, humanitarian destruction. You know, it's just it's so old news. You know, it's just old. I mean, recently, way farther than that by now.
Agreed. It's just, give us one normal year, please. It's been too long since we've had a normal year without any conflict, without COVID. The day that we got COVID restrictions over here was the day that Russia invaded Ukraine. It's just like, I'm going to get a break. I just want to crack on and enjoy my 20s.
Yeah.
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. But anyway, but I think I've not told you about this one, Tommy, but I want you to go to the Erasing the Bar jukebox and choose one song and one song only. It can be your favorite song in the world. It can be one to get up and running. But which song would you choose if you got put on the spot?
My favorite song? Wow. Well, let's see. Probably going to go. I mean, I guess pretty much my favorite song that really describes me and just gets to my soul is probably Monkey Man. You know, when I got back, I was, you know, I went on like an endless road trip. I flew back to New Mexico, got my truck, went to Baja, hung out with Dad, went to Oregon, and I was on my way down the coast highway coming through Santa Maria and Lompoc. And that's where I stopped in Santa Barbara and did all that and had a great time. And I was on my way to a buddy's house, and he goes, yeah, come on down. Everything will be fine. Yeah, we'll hang out, you know. And actually, he's actually famous. He's from the UK as well. Rupert Thorpe. Yeah, his father was really famous.
Okay, nice.
He goes, no, stop. I go, well, I'm halfway there. And I go, what am I supposed to do? Stop now? And he goes, no, turn. Come on back, because we have to go to the Rolling Stones. So we just went to the Stones at SoFi a couple months ago. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Was it good?
Yeah, it was missing one key player though. So
yeah, I know. Yeah. It's always going to be a little bit different now, isn't it? Unfortunately, but I never thought any of them would die. They kind of give off that it's like, you know, absolute eternal vibes where they're just going to be alive forever and one of the best bands forever. But it did happen, unfortunately, but it's still good.
Yeah. That's one band that I can listen to continuously. I mean, it just never gets old.
Good stuff. Well, I'm going to hand the reins over to you now, Tom. I want you to tell me your best drunk story. It can be about you. It can be about someone that you know, but what would you say your best drunk story is, mate?
Okay. Well, there's all these midget strippers this one day, and no, I'm just kidding. it would have to be, it would still have to be my wedding day. My soon to be wife at the time, her mom was asking me who's coming to the wedding, who's my best man, who's all this. And I said, well, Joe's my best man. He was like the dad that I really didn't have when my dad was working so much. He, you know, took me in, he showed me the glass business. He was, you know, turned out to be like a mentor and my best friend. So he meant a lot to me. And so she actually said that, no, Joe can't come to the wedding. And I said, well, I guess I won't be there then. Well, he is my best man, so he's coming. So anyway, you know, the night got crazy and everybody was drinking. Everybody disappeared, including my wife. Whose wife disappears on the wedding night, first of all?
Yeah, that's not a good sign. That is not a good sign.
Yeah. So maybe that's why I have a bad attitude about things. Could be. But anyway, so me and Joe just started carrying on and just, you know, doing some shots, getting crazy, just, you know, living it up, having a good time. And we were going up and down in the elevator looking for people. And we decided to have one of our famous brawls that we just, you know, we'll just start beating each other up and wrestling and throwing each other around and like fraternity stuff, you know? So by the time the elevator got to the lobby, apparently it had caused such a disturbance. It sounded like a 10.5 earthquake in the building, in the hotel. And there were six bouncers and six security guys waiting for us at the bottom when the doors opened and said that we had been 86th from the hotel. Okay. And I told them, no, I rented the hotel out. I'm sorry. We're not going anywhere. And so then, you know, it turned into them taking us outside and wanting to get into a big scuffle. But we actually, not one of them tried it. And it was just me and Joe against six. So it was good.
You're not a small guy, though, to be fair, right? You are quite a big lad. Big lad to be. Yeah.
Well, 30 years ago, I had a much, much more of a hair trigger. So
it's a great, great story, Tommy. Great story. I love that one. And finally, have you got a favorite bar, pub, or nightclub in the world that you can nominate?
Well, you know, there's quite a few. Okay, to put my finger on the favorite one, I guess it would have to be something like the one I've been to probably the most for over the years would be the Sagebrush Cantina in Calabasas.
Okay.
A lot of good memories there.
Yeah. Calabasas is obviously a really, really famous place. But like I say, we mentioned before we started recording, but I've been. I absolutely loved it. It's incredible. But it's a nightlife. Is it known for its nightlife in Calabasas? Is it more its views and like celebrity statuses?
I would say the Sagebrush is just known for every Sunday, it's Harley Day and Biker Day every Sunday. Nice. There's probably anywhere from 200 to 500 bikes there. Saturdays are really good. Fridays are really good. Like I said, I mean, drunk stories, I could probably pull a few out of there. I mean, it just so happens there's a petting zoo next door. There's a small farm next door. So some of the drunk stories, you know, could wake up the petting zoo.
Alcohol and petting zoos is not a good
thing. No, they should not be next door to each other.
No. No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. So what was the name of that bar then?
The Sagebrush Cantina.
Nice. Okay, great. We'll add it to the list.
Last orders in the bar.
Well, thanks, Tom, for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Before we do finish, I know you've got a few projects going on. Can you tell us about any of those projects yet? Or are they all things, you know, irons in the fire?
Well, you know, I was just I really want to come to the UK on different terms this time. So anything, you know, that pops up over there, I'm definitely game for. I'd love to go on any show over there or whatever. Because last time I was in the UK, I was there while the wedding was going on. So I did have a good time when I was there, but I had to be sort of like incognito, but I did go to a bunch of really cool street parties where they were having like their own interpretation of the royal wedding going on. So there would be like, you know, Meghan and Harry lookalikes, or, you know, children from the neighborhood actually pretending they were getting married while the royal wedding was going on. And I hit four different street parties.
Way.
So it was a lot of fun. Yeah. There was a guy who worked for the Mirror on Sunday over there.
Yeah.
took me over there, and he was just chaperoning me and just, you know, taking me around. So, but I would really love to come over there on different terms and see the sites and see the people and visit the people now that I probably have a better reputation, I suppose.
Absolutely. Have you been to Manchester before?
No, never.
You should come to Manchester. Come to Manchester. We'll put you up. Manchester is the best city in the UK for me. The people are the best.
Yeah, I mean, it's beautiful. It's beautiful there. I mean, what I did see of it, I mean, I really, really enjoyed Windsor. I really enjoyed the tower, the bridge, everything. It was just incredible landscaping and history. And yeah, one of my projects now that I got you that rings a bell to me, that's of quite a bit of importance. So when I was in Grants Pass, Andrew Martin, the guy who wrote the Megan book and the Diana book. So he came to my house for about a week and reset and had quite a few beers. We had our own little beer tour of, you know, IPAs and local breweries in Grants Pass. But you know, he came up and talked to me about a bunch of content for that book. The second time he came, the third night that he came to my house, I opened up the door and he bowed to me. And I go, come on, Andrew, we haven't been drinking yet. What's going on? What are you doing? And he goes, you're already royalty and you don't even know it. And I said, explain to me. And he says, well, you know, as you know, for the book and authenticity and history, we've done two extensive genealogy reports on you and your family and your father and everything. And he says, you guys are directly related to Robert the Bruce.
That's crazy. That's absolutely mental. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he showed me the report. I looked, and it, sure enough, it just like it traces back. So one thing I'm gonna do very soon here is I'm gonna go get one of those genetic marker tests.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I want to put together a production to where me and my father can go back and, you know,
yeah,
check.
There is literally a program over here that does that, and it's called Who Do You Think You Are, I think it's called, and that's exactly what they do. They get a guest on and they do, you know, an extensive research for like the past 1,000 years. So you should definitely take a look at that, and they'd 100% love to have you on. So that'd be incredible. That's how crazy is that, by the way?
I mean not only is it crazy, but it's the makings for a great documentary.
100%. Yeah. Great stuff. Thank you for coming on, Thomas Markle Jr. It's been a pleasure. Great to learn more about you. And yeah, all the best for the future projects. I'm hoping to see you. I'm hoping to find out more about your family very soon.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll see you in Manchester. It's really good to be on your show. And thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You're welcome. Whenever you want, get over here. We'll take you out for a night out.
All right. Sounds good.
Don't forget to give us a follow at @raisingthebar_podcast on Instagram, and be sure to give us a review if you're enjoying the episodes.